Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, September 10th, 1998. In the fireside room this morning is Phil and Lola Dean, session number 98-4, and is titled Service at Home and with Family. Let's listen in.
In the last few sessions, we've been talking about service, how Scripture calls us to service. We spent a whole session on that, and really appreciated having those of you who are better versed in the Bible than we are to help us out with that one. Yesterday, or last night, we talked about how to prepare ourselves for service. And you remember that Sean Copeland's thesis was there are three ingredients that you really need to prepare yourself for decision-making and for service. The first was prayer, and the second was examination of conscience, which to me means really looking seriously at how you're making this decision. And the third was participation in small community, which to me means worship group or worship. Any other thoughts on where we are at this point? Because today we're going to talk about the church. Okay. We got into a little issue on the Holy Spirit, and we may just spin off into some theologic discussion on that, but that's one we can't handle. Phil is going to start us out today.
Yeah. Well, we've concluded that no parish can thrive unless the active membership all participates in the work of the church. The paid clergy is not able to have a successful functioning parish if they're doing all the work. Everything from counting the money to filling the communion cups to help putting together the potlucks all take effort, and some of them are not terribly glamorous jobs, and some of them can be quite exciting. And we've been told that some of even the mundane jobs can be made exciting by creative planning. And so we thought we'd talk about some of these today. We do have a scripture that we want to use to start us off today. And that's Ephesians 2:19. We're reminded that the physical building of the church is not the key thing. It's the spirit of the service within the church. And it goes, consequently, you are no longer foreigners and aliens, but fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Jesus Christ himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple to the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. And in chapter 4:11, we find the words, it was he who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, some to be pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Now, there are many jobs, actually myriad jobs in the church, and we thought we'd just list some of them and maybe discuss some ways that things that in your experience has been creative and made them a little more exciting than just the drudgery features that have often been features of some of these jobs.
Nursery.
Oh, that must have been a problem in your church.
Ushering.
Ushering.
and Sunday school teachers.
Indeed.
And our head of Sunday school now appeals for educating the young rather than Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She thinks it has a more glamorous name.
In some churches, we read the lessons.
Well, the readers
have to read all of them.
Lectors.
Lectors. Lectors. Lectors.
And how about janitor?
Sometimes paid, sometimes not.
Yeah. And our church is now paying.
Alder Guild.
Mm-hmm.
Assisting ministers. Communion and so on.
Mm-hmm. We got them in choir.
Yeah.
Moining on.
Production, the production, and that includes getting the bulletins and so on, and but also other things too.
Like office work?
Office
sometimes
work.
Sometimes the secretary does it, sometimes the pastor does it, depending on the situation.
Some pastors want to try things and duplicating
some the work. Some pastors want to. Nobody else would have liked.
Bring the library.
In the middle of the night on Saturday night.
And greeters. Greeters.
Greeters, yes. Mm-hmm. Not every church has that, but it's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Congregational council.
Mm-hmm. Committee members.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
See, under committees. Council, do you think of congregation and individuals as well, or?
Well, I don't know about your synod, but in our synod, we're called congregational council. Instead of church
council. Oh, you mean council members?
Yeah,
the same
as
church
council
members. Okay.
Yeah. The other council.
The leaders of the church.
It's over there.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm thinking they must have an oration in this place. No one's perfect.
We're one of the church.
That's what I
said. Voting members for the assembly.
Let's see. Delegates.
Voting members.
I didn't hear anyone say stewardship.
Wait, I missed one in between. There's church council and something came after.
Somebody said church women. Women of the church.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Voting members for the assembly.
Okay. Yeah. A few people who are visitors.
You could include men of the church.
Well, some congregations do have a men's organization.
Yes.
Organizing and leading small groups.
Yes. And those can be exciting.
Yes.
So much.
Okay.
Evangelists.
Organist.
Okay.
Music, the whole music program.
The whole music program.
Yeah. No one said anything about youth.
We have Sunday school teachers, but we don't. How about youth program?
That would be separate.
Well, what's that one?
Youth advisors.
That's how we started out.
Those saints who take vans loads of kids to Golden Village.
I come in, they're so tired, they can't do anything for 2 days. I mean, we know how to do that.
Yeah, saints.
We took a youth group to Mexico to physically build an orphanage dormitory. Mm. And it was 100 degrees at dawn.
Mm. Oh.
And there was no potable water.
Oh.
They had to bring water in jugs in.
We slept in a mash tent.
Ooh.
And
it was good for them.
The first job we had to do was build a latrine, dig a latrine, an outhouse.
They were quite motivated to do it, however, when they saw the old one.
Oh, boy. The kids were so
tired. Let's not get off track, Phil.
Drivers who pick up shut-ins and bring them to church. Just while we take people who go and transport people.
Some congregations have that.
Stop and pick up a couple of ladies in the place.
Tate Ministry.
Library. Some churches have one.
All right.
The area that we got, I think, most satisfaction from, aside from youth, was the social ministry. We had a very active social ministry group, and that had many exciting possibilities because you're serving double there. You're not only serving your parish, but leading other people to learn how to serve in the community. But it has a double satisfaction.
What would you call, I'm trying to think of the name, one name of a, it's an organization.
Stephen Ministry.
Stephen Ministry, that sort of a thing. It has, it involves Stephen. Counseling and by lay people.
Well, then there's church also.
Visiting.
We had a pastor with a personal problem, and we had to develop a pastoral committee for support and guidance.
Well, I think every parish ought to, whether he had, all pastors have problems.
Well, that leads us into our scenario that we're going to have you work on.
Thank you, John.
Did you set him up?
No, I didn't, actually. What we're going to do now, I think this is just kind of touching the tip of the iceberg. But what we have for you today, we're going to make, you know, we don't lecture, we make you work. So what we'd like you to do is to get into threes. So three, six, nine. Okay, this is perfect. We'll have, yeah, I think threes would be better than twos, don't you?
Threes,
yeah. Yeah. Preferably not, there's two of you who are partners here, so if you could go, you know, in a different group. You can choose whoever you want to be with.
Well, why don't you read this first?
No, I'm not going to read it. I'm going to give it to them.
Should we
read it
together?
Make them.
What we have here is a scenario. It sounds like a soap opera, doesn't it? But in some ways, it almost reads like a soap opera. However, this is a real situation. It's changed somewhat. But this is a real church. And this is what happened to a real church. And what we would like you to do is to look at it, especially in three different ways. What is happening in this church? What can you identify with what is happening? And remember that in any situation, there's no one person or no one thing that is the total fault of the whole thing. That there's always lots of circumstances. What can you do in this situation? And how would you proceed with the process? So, Jake, you want to take the group? Maybe you could, let's see. Yeah, one of you could go over here and we'll make sure that you aren't all.
Well, we're three women, we should have one man.
You want
to go with John?
All right, John, you want to go with two of these women? How we doing?
Everybody got their solutions all wrapped up?
Yeah. Okay, why don't we all come back together? Those of you who are way back there in the corner might want to move up again. And as you report out of your groups, why don't you just tell us your first name? Because I think the more we do that, the more we get to know people in the village, and it's always nice to have a name. Of course, we may not remember it 15 minutes from now, but at least we could try. Okay, let's start with what is happening in this church. What are the big rocks in the bowl of this church?
Two of them.
Talk about the big rocks. Okay, what's happening in this church? What are the big factors that are going on?
Why don't we start right over here?
Well, or anybody jump in. Murder.
I'm Jay.
People have lost their feeling that this is their church.
They've lost their leader.
Got too much leadership.
Extremely perceptive. That's extremely perceptive.
Thank you very much.
Okay, loss of feeling.
You're as smart as you look.
Church belongs to the parishioners.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And this is Ruth that just spoke.
Yeah, this is Ruth. I'm Ruth.
Okay, next. Who else has got something?
We got a dysfunctional family system.
Okay, the church family.
Okay. But take it a step further. Why?
What are the most outstanding parts of it, Jake, that are dysfunctional?
Well, obvious. The chief dysfunction is the pastor, and then that throws the whole system in crisis.
Okay.
Well, the pastor's drinking problem is part of that.
So we have a problem, an unrecognized problem, or an undocumented problem with alcoholism. Okay. If it were an acknowledged problem with alcoholism, it'd be a lot easier to deal with, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Undocumented.
Undocumented.
It's been documented.
Denied.
Denied.
But it hasn't been documented. They haven't found that he's actually doing it.
Yeah.
Well,
it's highly suspected.
Actually,
Phil, we're dealing with a hypothetical case.
Watch it, Phil.
Well, the alcoholism is only a symptom of a lot of other stuff.
Sure.
I mean, his whole leadership style is controlling. Mm-hmm. And he's denying that as well.
Okay. Any other factors that are going on here?
My name's Eileen, and when we took a look at this, we felt that there were problems starting long before that, though.
Okay.
Because the pastor, who was so energetic and into everything at the beginning, seemed to be very controlling. And we were just wondering if some of the people who were taking leadership also were doing the same thing, because it mentions how some of them didn't want to step aside.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, let's see, how can we put that in four words?
How did we write that down?
we used control, the word controlling.
I didn't think that first pastor was particularly controlling. He had a lot of good, done a lot of delegating. He had a lot of stuff going that he wasn't into.
Active and strong church council. He had
active women's group, social ministry beginning to develop, good Sunday school program.
I don't think he was a control freak.
Was he caught in a situation where the workload was getting...
Well, I think the new pastor we said was control.
Yeah.
The new pastor.
Yeah.
Not the first one. Okay.
No. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, right, the first one.
Okay, the new pastor.
The first one was a good delegator. It just got to be too much for him.
With the second pastor, did we have a controlling pastor, and we also had controlling committee people who were not willing to step up? So we had this is where the
stage
came in, didn't it? Okay.
Sometimes that can be deceiving. I remember the time in our church someone brought up, they felt the old gang was running the council.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So brought it up, how many on the council have been here less than 5 years? And that was a majority of the council. So the old timers couldn't run the show if they wanted to. But it was, to some of the new people, it seemed that the old group were still hanging on. It was an excuse, maybe.
Old and new is just sort of relative, isn't it?
I didn't hear you.
Old and new is relative, and the two, yes. Those 5 year, 10 years seemed old to the new.
Yeah. Sometimes the new go to previous council members and say, what should I do now? Mm-hmm. Seen that happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's good or bad.
Okay, so we had a very vibrant situation going on, but it really had grown big. And then we have this other situation coming in. Okay, we had one other incidental thing on here, and that is we had the ill health of the music director, mm-hmm. which was also could be a factor.
Yes. I think a real crucial point came when they needed, they realized that they were going great, but they were getting, it was getting to be too much, and there were some things coming up. They needed more leadership, and they added an assistant pastor, and it was a poor match. If that had been a good match, yeah. That could just have been
sailed right along
and been simply glorious, but it was a poor match. Mm-hmm. And that's devastating.
And then we don't know where that, it says the senior pastor left.
Yes.
And we don't know what, if there still was an assistant or
the assistant stayed on.
Okay.
And nowadays, the assistant has to leave when the main pastor leaves. Mm-hmm. The assistant has to leave.
Yeah, I think, let's see, I can't remember how far, we took it through the 1 year, and that's how long the assistant minister left. The assistant minister left here at the end of the first year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he stayed on until they got another call.
So did most of the membership.
He just stayed on until they got another call.
Mm-hmm. When that congregation was getting too big in terms of activities or whatever for the present, or the leadership of the committees and the groups at that time, a search probably ought to have been very vigorously carried on to try to bring new blood in. And I think many times in a congregation, at least in our congregation, there's an awful lot of people that sit out there and don't say a word. And you almost have to pin them down and ask them. And some of those people have some pretty good ideas.
Mm-hmm. There's one other factor that identified this church which would make it difficult for any minister. And that, I think we stated in the very beginning, hopefully we did, is this was a church of chiefs. This was a lot of CEOs, a lot of professional people, a lot of high movers and shakers. It was a difficult church for any person to come into as a minister. So that was a real factor. It was a group of powerful people who were used to calling the shots.
Mm-hmm. And then the new guy didn't let him call anything.
That's exactly where the clash came.
And we don't know why the initial pastor could not get along and the assistant could not. It just says, but the match was not good. And the senior pastor left.
Kind of euphemistic.
But they did extensive searching.
Well, yeah, that guy'd been there 20 years. It's time for him to go.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, well, let's move along now. What could...
That first paragraph, I got to tell you, sounds exactly like our mission.
Well, I think your church probably started about the same time as this church did, 62. And I think a lot of churches went through this 62, same
and,
kind of thing.
Yeah. And it got big, didn't it, John? It got big.
Oh, this is, in many ways, this is very,
yes.
I'm telling them,
but
very
it,
much.
But it falls apart down here, and we didn't fall apart down there.
Well, there's another thing that happens here when a minister has been in a congregation for a long period of time and leaves. What happens?
Yeah, they leave too. Yeah.
And now people don't
breathing.
Stick with their congregation through thick and thin. Mm-hmm. They go. Mm-hmm. If it gets to be contentious. If there's conflict that makes them uncomfortable, they don't stay and fight it out.
No.
They transfer. They go to another congregation.
But they, that's they're unhappy, they leave.
That's right.
And some of us always like to look back on that pad they used to have for women on cigarettes. I'd rather fight than switch, you know, the gals.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Well, I stay in the fight and rather fight than switch. Okay. I know that a lot of people don't. They move. And to me, you've got, in 1 year, the thing that has happened as strongly as it has here, we're going to have to do something radical. I think, among other things, this comes from our group, not just me. You're going to have a pastoral committee or some other name for it that's, I would say, composed partially of the council and then some members that they pick from the congregation that are well respected, whether they're new or old. And then I think you better be calling in the bishop.
You're talking about a pastoral right now. Pastoral care committee?
Yes.
Okay. What other ideas did you have? Now, we skipped number two, but we can come back to that, because let's go to how would you proceed?
What did we skip?
Well, number two here, what can you as an individual do? But let's plug that in at the end.
Yeah, sort of like how would you proceed? We had a little trouble with those two questions. We saw them somewhat identical.
Okay, one is we were asking, what would you do as a church? How would you come together to proceed with this? And the other is, what as an individual, as your own personality, how would you plug into it?
Oh. And the other thing that I would put in there is having, have small group meetings, we've called them cottage meetings, in which you meet in homes and people discuss the problems. I mean, you can't do it just in an open, usually in an open congregational meeting.
No.
Okay. And if you let it go, there gets to be small committees, but what's the word? They just get together and they talk and they criticize and they do this and do that.
Very destructive.
And then you get all kinds of little groups, little hot beds of
little Bible studies in the homes turn into
what are we going to do about that?
Really nasty.
Really nasty. Also said you should have a good job description that the pastor should do.
Well, the council should
give
do
it to him.
Not only the pastor, but all the other.
For everybody else, too.
Everybody else.
And then they ought to put it someplace where they can know it's there and they use it. Ours is buried somewhere down there.
The bottom of the pile.
Well, you should also have a good constitution.
Yes.
Our constitution, for example, would not allow these people to serve that long.
Yeah.
You after two terms, you cannot succeed yourself.
Yes.
And our constitution calls for a pastoral care committee. We didn't have that aspect in there till we started getting difficulty. Then we
see. I think that's part of the problem with churches, though. They we shouldn't wait.
Yeah, but we didn't know any better. Yeah.
We did the same thing.
The other thing too, a lot of councils when they meet or when they constitute early in the fall, what do you want to take care of? You know, what's your next area of expertise? What do you want? What's your choice in terms of you want to work with them? Worship and music or whatever it is. In my opinion, only mine perhaps, I don't think those guys who happen to be in the council for like this, you know, for years and years and years, and some of them are in there for quite a long time, I don't think they should be allowed to keep the same, operation area. They ought to be made to switch so that they get a different kind of a look at it and a different kind of a viewpoint in some of those things. You get to hear some of the people who have maybe good ideas and never ever get a chance to tell them the same.
But this rotation off the council is important, right?
Yeah. In other words, don't let them have more than how many terms? Two terms.
Two terms.
Two, 3 years.
And sit out a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's just quickly go around and say how you as an individual would plug into this. Darlene, why don't you start? How did you see yourself plugging into this?
Are you asking?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Who are you asking? Darlene?
Darlene.
Well, I certainly would pray.
Good.
And of course, together as a group, we talked about contacting the council and the bishop.
Okay, and as a person, prayer would be your first thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yes.
That's pretty much what I felt too. Was
okay. Go ahead.
Excuse me.
We're going this way.
I'm sorry.
Pardon. Go ahead.
This sums it up very well. It seems to me, and praying is the predominant opportunity that we have to solve the problem.
Okay.
The other thing I probably would offer to be on a pastoral committee. Although I also told these guys that I've been in a struggling church for so long. I mean, which eventually led to a split. And, you know, and I mean, we've gone through so much today that in the area where I live now, if I were to come up against this, I think I'd leave. You know what I mean? I mean, I think I feel like I have been in a struggling church for 30 years. I don't think I could. I don't think I want to do that again.
Mm-hmm. It's disruptive to your spiritual life. Yeah. It's terrible.
It's very, very, very difficult.
Okay.
Well, I guess what would I do as an individual? I would be willing to try to serve where I could, and that would be whether I was on that committee or whether I was the pastoral care committee. And if they didn't want me on that, be offering to serve elsewhere. And the prayer, I think, I would assume that to be automatic.
Okay. Jake?
I think it's important in this kind of a situation for people to have an opportunity to talk candidly and openly without it becoming a bitching session. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how, that's a mighty fine line. Mm-hmm. But in the same way that the pastor's denying his part of it, the congregation can in a way deny the problem and try to pretend it's not there. And as long as you, I mean, there's an elephant in the living room. Mm-hmm. How can you ignore the elephant? So I guess it would be to try to open up communication. And it seems to me if that congregation is going to survive, that until there's a change in pastoral leadership, that the challenge is to function in spite of the pastor instead of crumbling because of the pastor. And I don't know how you do that, but it's somehow things have to keep going on in spite of him.
And you would do your best to help that happen.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure I know what to do except to try to keep communication open.
Okay, Ruth? We're going to have to.
Well,
let's each person say what they would, how they would plug in first.
I don't know what I do. I don't know. I'm afraid that what I would do would just be to put my head in the sand, go to church on Sunday morning and worship and ignore what was around me and turn around and go home.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a perfectly logical thing to do sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not very strong about things like that. I was kind of ashamed of it, but I wouldn't probably transfer to another congregation. I would probably stay there. I would continue to make my offering. I would continue to sing in the choir. I would continue to do the things I had done. But I would probably separate myself from the
From the problem.
From the problem. I think that's how I would survive and keep my spiritual life.
Okay.
If this guy had any kind of a sermon, that is. If he had a sermon, I don't know what I could do.
If I could keep from getting angry, which I can't do very well, I think this gentleman over here hit the nail on the head. I think you can look into your congregations and find people who have the ability to be arbitrators, and then get some real interplay. I happen to think that if you take a congregation, and we have done it in our congregation several times, and I think it's been very productive, and we split these people up in groups, 10, around, and give them sometimes the same format to work on, what comes out of that. Then you get some ideas, but you also have to keep from somehow controlling anger part.
Right.
And I don't know how to do that, because I can't deal with that sometimes. And sometimes I just like to bat my head against the wall.
I think what you're saying is very important in a situation like this.
I would just continue to do my best in whatever role I'm doing. Uh-huh. And try to and be friendly to everybody, both factions, be friends with all of them.
Mm-hmm. A mediator, okay.
Well, I'm a retired pastor back in my congregation.
Which sets up its own problems.
Which has its own problems. It's not what I would do, but what I would like to do, I would get in the very middle of it. Just the opposite of my wife, and maybe that tells you something.
You would come home and I'd say, don't tell me what happened.
People have very great difficulty in being forthright and being honest with themselves and then with one another and expressing themselves. I think there's a great need for education communications. It seems to me that they're not really communicating, and it seems to me, and another thing, I don't know if we mentioned, I was gone momentarily, one of the great problems that's happening in this church, and it's happening today, is a change in the whole of society.
Yeah, it's going right along with that time.
Big arguments, shall you have a pipe organ, shall you have drums and this, the whole, it isn't just, it's trying to meet the situation of today and the great changes that have taken place in the 70s and the 80s.
Right. And that's exactly when this happened.
And they're really difficult to...
Well, I can tell you how Phil and I responded. Phil was the mediator. I was with you. It made me so angry that this was going on in the house of God. Mm-hmm. I came to Holden.
we did
was my church for several years.
We got nothing out of the worship service. It was a disaster. We set up a house church.
Really subversive.
We continued to support the church. We set up all parish retreat. And we organized committees to go to the...
So how could you do this?
We just did it.
We just did it.
Were
we
you
did
on it, council?
Phil was on the council.
The council did it. The pastor wasn't involved.
Oh, okay.
We just got the whole thing. We got a mediator.
Yeah.
We set up. We encouraged each person to go to the bishop. The bishop was not supportive, by the way. And then we got committee.
Yeah.
The council went to the bishop. The bishop finally set up a inquisition in the church. It was horrible.
Make it brief.
Yeah. Anyway, the pastor refused to leave. We were adversarial. I spent 3 hours with him in sort of a objective looking at the thing. His problem was his ego. He was a self-aggrandizer.
But the problem before that was, again, it was a societal problem. I don't know how many of you remember what happened in Seattle. We had a Pentecostal wave came through, mm-hmm. and we had a lot of people who became speakers in tongues. Mm-hmm. And so our church was sort of split on that to start with. And this person we called had been working with Billy Graham, and that gave him the anointing. And it was bad decisions on the part of the call committee. It was, you know, it was just a mess. But now that church is strong and good, and but it's two pastors later. Okay, moving on, quick. Well, we're past time already.
Well, I think that we should hustle.
Yeah.
Because we're losing ground here.
We should be overdone.
Yeah. Why don't you start with the theme of here, B?
Okay. Well, why don't we just give you, in Acts 6, there's a very good description of how the early church ran into problems with the Grecian Jews being upset with the Hebraic Jews because the widows weren't getting the right amount of food. So this is not a new issue, folks. You know, the church has been in trouble from time to time. But the other thing is that in 1 Corinthians 4, all of you, if you could read that sometime, because it talks about leadership in the church. And it's a very, very important statement. And in 12:4, it talks about, of course, the gifts that we all bring to the church. But finishing up, one of the things that our theme book, I think, has a wonderful chapter on is on Sabbath and on keeping the Sabbath and how important it is for us to come together to worship, because that truly is what the church is all about. And that is the function for us, one day a week, to keep the Sabbath, to come together, to worship, and to always, to not forget that. And there is a chapter in here on that, and on pages, it's chapter 6. So if you can get the book either in the library or at the bookstore and read that. And I'm sorry we ran 10 minutes over. But thank you for your discussion. I have a feeling this touched a nerve almost for everybody, and we've all been in churches that have had trouble. Our group that we have now is a worship group. We have no pastor. And it's probably one pastors who come to give the sermon once a month say, "You guys are so lucky. We have evangelical Christian, Pentecostal, some Southern Baptist, a professor of theology from Duke, an Episcopalian professional woman who quit her job because she really got fed up with the institutional church, 5 Lutherans,
and a Catholic.
That's about it.
Any Catholics?
No, the Catholics have 3 masses going on the island. We don't need that, too. Thank you, you guys. You've been great. And tomorrow morning, we are going to take on the subject dear to our hearts, which is the family.